Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, January the 27th. And welcome to our Friday night chat with our good friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. We're going to talk about the legislature and the conversations about school choice. We'll talk about the border and the fact that Texas is suing, along with 19 other states, suing the federal government or the Biden administration. We'll talk a little bit about the documents as well, just get George's perspective on that. So let me say hello to George in South Texas. How's the weather, George?
It's cold. Well, by our standards, it's cold.
Yeah.
It was only at 37 this morning, and it did get up to the high 50s, but it's plunged down again. Starting, I believe, on Monday, we're going to be having some colder weather again and possibly some rain showers. But by our standards, it's cold.
Well, next week, I looked at the projections, and next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays, we'll have precipitation and temperatures in the low 30s. So that may mean that we'll have a little bit of snow. We'll have to see how that goes.
Well,
but
according to the almanac, in the middle of February, we're supposed to have another snow event like we did about two or three years ago.
Oh, the one that shut down the power grid?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We're supposed to have another one. So, you know, be prepared.
Yes. Yeah. That was a nasty one. That was a very nasty one. Gee, I got a dental appointment in the middle of February, so I hope they don't cancel me because of that. But anyway, I got to ask you, who's that handsome guy behind you there?
Oh, that is a that is a superimposed background that was put in by my nephew, and I have no idea how he did it. I was trying to figure out before we started how to change it, and he put it in there, and so. You know, my challenge I'm very, very challenged when it comes to the computer. So,
well,
I'll figure it out.
I think you and I understand that because it's the new generation that understands. I mean, we just know how to turn this thing off and on.
Yes.
And that's about as far as we go. But let me begin before we get to the serious stuff. Let me begin your reaction to the Dallas Cowboys. I didn't think they would beat San Francisco, honestly. But at the same time, you know, this is now an annual problem. It seems like they always fall short. It's hard to believe the last time they got to the NFC Championship game or to the Super Bowl was 1996.
Wow.
So it's been a while. It's been a while, even though, you know, we're supposed to be America's team. We have certainly not been playing like it.
27 years is a long time.
It is. I mean, it's what that means is if you are in college right now, you don't remember.
No.
You were not alive when the Cowboys.
The Cowboys don't remember.
Yeah. So that's a big time. But I think personally, I feel sorry for Dak Prescott because I think his value was exaggerated and the expectations were maybe too high. And he's not a Super Bowl quarterback. Maybe he'll prove me wrong next year. But this is now two or three years in a row where he hasn't really come through, George.
I have a lot of friends, of course, we all do here in Texas, who are diehard Cowboy fans, and they love Dak Prescott. However, the fact of the matter is that his play does not show that he is a he is the caliber of Joe Burrows. He's of the caliber of Roger Staubach. Of he is of the caliber of certainly of Troy Aikman. And you know, he's a good quarterback, but it's obvious from his play the last three games that he has problems.
Yeah.
I mean, the interceptions and the overthrows. I mean, they doomed the Cowboys.
You know, it's funny, George, because we saw three games: Washington, Tampa Bay, and San Francisco, and it's hard to believe it was the same quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, against Washington, he didn't do
it. It was a disaster.
Right. And then against Tampa Bay, he was probably had the best game of his career. And, you know, interceptions are not always the quarterback's fault, because there are times when the receiver runs the wrong route or whatever, or the ball bounces. I mean, you know, it's not a perfect measurement, but when you have a lot of them, it does hurt you, no question about it. So, you know, there's a lot of talk up here.
The Jacksonville game, I think the Jacksonville game sealed it for me.
Yeah, that was a problem. Yeah, that was the other game that was a problem. So I can only tell you that I don't think that Jerry Jones can move him because of the contract, but he's 30 years old, and I think it may be time for the Cowboys to maybe start looking at the next quarterback,
correct,
whether it's through the draft or maybe a trade or something like that. Well, let's talk a little bit about the border. The latest that I have on the border, George, oh, you always have something, of course, more recent than me on it, or because you're closer to it. But the latest I have is that Texas and 19 other states are suing the federal government over this parole policy that the Biden administration has unilaterally implemented. And again, I've always been in favor of some type of asylum policy. I'm not against that. But it should be done through the Congress. And that's what I think Texas and 19 other states are arguing here, that this should be done through the Congress, not through the executive order, George. Is that how you read it?
Oh, definitely. This is another complication, just like the Dreamers, the DACA. This is another complication that's going to have to go through the courts because the Biden administration is not going to back off. And I'm almost positive that if we have another Republican president, he's going to be afraid to undo it, because there are so many. I mean, we've got an estimated 7 million new aliens in the country. And one of the things that's complicating this situation even more so, besides the fact that it's a unilateral action by the president rather than by Congress, is that he's also taken on utilizing a new project or program that he's put together in Mexico to declare people, to allow them to declare a parole in Mexico so that they can enter. And thereby, when they cross, they are no longer called illegal aliens.
Right.
The New York Times ran a big banner on Monday declaring that the numbers of illegal aliens crossing the border has dropped tremendously. And the reason being that they are no longer classified that way. Again, it is another of these shell games that the Biden administration is using. In the meantime, it was reported today that almost 1,500 since October 1, almost 1,500 criminal aliens. Now, these are people that committed a crime in the United States and went across, and they were caught coming back in. They have their fingerprints are on record, so they were caught coming back in one way or another. But 1,500 have been caught at the border.
Right.
Now imagine how many have not.
Right. And that's the problem, that this is it's a very chaotic way of doing business.
Extremely.
And that's why I criticize it. Again, as I said, I'm not opposed to having an asylum program for people, particularly from Venezuela, where they have a regime I know people want to leave it, but it has to be in an orderly fashion. I also have another issue with what's happening, George. Just this afternoon, I was chatting with a lady who called me and said that she was a student of mine here in the last semester. And she called me and said, "Hey, teacher, look, I just lost my job today." Because they came in and told us that business was down and so laying off just about everybody. Now, this lady is here legally, okay? So if we are now laying off, now she's an immigrant from, I think, Colombia, but she's here legally. If we are laying off people who are here legally, what are these people that we're bringing over going to do? What type of work are they going to do?
Exactly. Fox ran an article, a news piece yesterday, last night, in fact, regarding a gentleman from Venezuela that they had been following since the time that he crossed in Eagle Pass, and he was now in New York City, and he has been in New York City for 3 months now, for 2 or 3 months, and he has yet to find work. He is panicking. He is in a homeless shelter. He doesn't know what he's going to be doing. He wants to bring his family. He wants to work, but there's nothing.
Right. And that's the problem. Now, people say there's a lot of work. Yes, there is. There's a lot of work like in restaurants and all of that. That's true. But still, I mean, if we're laying off people who are here legally, you know, the new ones coming in, even if they come in legally, even if we give them whatever pass so that they can come in and wait here, it does create a burden for them. I think the charities taking care of these people, like Catholic Charities, there's only so much that they can do. I mean, they can maybe help you get a job, maybe. Maybe they can help you get some furniture for a new apartment. Maybe they can help you pay the first month's rent. But at some point, they have to let you go because right. you have to get on your own. And that's the difference. I've mentioned before the difference from when our family came to the United States. In the first month or so that we were here, we were helped by a church.
It was controlled.
It was controlled. That's it. We were helped by a church. But that church made it very clear, or at least they didn't tell us, but their actions made it very clear that they wanted us to get as independent as soon as possible.
Correct.
Because they wanted us to somehow make it without assistance.
And sadly, in interviewing some of these migrants that are here in San Antonio, what we are beginning to see is a lot of them are beginning to learn to depend on the public welfare system, and that's a bad. I mean, you know, that's going to be a tragedy. Gonna be a tragedy.
That's going to be, that's going to drain a lot of local resources. Look at Yuma, Arizona. I just read that city is like collapsed. I mean, they don't have any place to put them, and the hospitals are over flooded. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of children are coming over too, as I understand.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
So, you know, they have to be taken care of as far as schools, as far as healthcare. No, I mean, this has been such an irresponsible thing on the part of the Biden administration. And I only ask the question, what if they had kept in place Remain in Mexico? What, just that alone, if they had
just
kept that in place,
we
wouldn't be faced with this situation. Because clearly, by eliminating Remain in Mexico, and you're very close to this because you know a lot of people who work on the border, I think by eliminating Remain in Mexico, they basically opened up the door and said, come right in.
Yep. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Well, this lawsuit, I think Texas and the other 19 states are going to win because it's really a lawsuit about the powers of the president. So I think they're going to win as they have won other cases. But it simply ties up the courts for another 6 months or whatever. So during that time, we're just waiting for the courts to decide, George.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately so much of our policies are going to be discussed, are going to be held up, in the courts. I mean, that's a heck of a way to run a country.
Not a very good way to run a country, to say the least. Well, let's talk a little bit about school choice. This is a movement that is gaining. Iowa just signed a school choice law. Arizona has one. Oklahoma has one. It's growing in other states, primarily Republican states or red states, but it is a growing movement. And it is one of the things that the legislature will consider. What can you tell us about that? Do you think it'll pass, George?
I think it's got a very, very good chance. I think the amount of support behind it is growing exponentially. And the other thing is that I think that the teachers' unions are shooting themselves in the foot by fighting it and resisting it, because finally, in my opinion, we are arguing back in a logical manner, or we are arguing, conservatives are arguing in a very logical manner while they are arguing in a very emotional. We had a recent meeting here in the teachers unions having meetings to discuss it, and when the microphones from the local media were placed in their faces, all they could do was ask for more money, that we need more money for this and we need for more money for that. And the next day it became very easy to counter that. I mean, the schools are in shambles. The other thing that we're beginning also to see, Silvio, and at least here in South Texas, I'm not sure in Dallas. Well, no, I think I read that in Dallas and Fort Worth they were having the same problem, is school districts finding teachers. And teachers don't want to go back, not only because of low pay, because that's usually what everybody talks about, it's the low pay, but also because a lot of these schools are out of control. They don't discipline the kids.
Right.
And there was a teacher in Virginia that was shot by a 16-year-old,
right.
By a 6-year-old rather,
right.
By a 6-year-old who brought a gun. Right. So, discipline in public schools is really, really hurting. It's really hurting the public school system. It's really fueling the voucher.
I agree. No, in fact, there was a front page article here in the Dallas Morning News. There was a big graph of the money the teachers, I guess, make or are projected to make. Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad profession in terms of the salary. I mean,
no.
If you can make $50,000 or $60,000 a year,
if you've got the patience to do it.
Yeah, well, but that's it. But teachers, you know, I've always felt that teachers are people. It's a calling. It's not a job. It's really a calling. So, I mean, some people, if you want to be, and the teachers that I had over the years, the people who I know are teachers, it's a calling. It's something that it's inside of them. It's almost like being a preacher or being a doctor or whatever. It's a calling, something you have, and it's not so much about money. But in a lot of conversations that I've had with teachers over the years, the biggest challenge, especially in the public schools in the cities, is what you say, the discipline problem.
Yeah. Danger.
You know, danger in many cases, discipline. I remember one time talking to a teacher who said to me, you know, I'm having such a hard time, you know, contacting the parents and getting the parents to get serious about the kids' education. So those, I don't think too many teachers signed up for that.
No, nope.
I don't think that's what they signed up for. Now, what I find interesting, and we'll know more here in Texas, of course, as the school choice goes through, the bill goes through. I guess there's different ways a school choice program can be. In Iowa, what they say is that the money is going to follow the student.
Right.
That's what they call it. So instead of giving the money to the education department, they give it to the student or the parents.
Exactly.
And then the parents decide. Now, I have always felt, George, a lot of teachers say, well, but if you go private, then a lot of us are going to lose our jobs. And I argue, no, you're not going to lose your jobs. Some of you are going to even make more money.
Or they can follow the money themselves.
Yes. And many of these private schools or whatever, they're going to need teachers.
Exactly.
And they'll, if you're a good teacher, they're going to pay you a good salary in much the same way that a private business will pay you more if you're better at whatever you do. So I think the teacher, you're right, the teachers union is being emotional about all of this. But, you know, I was watching the other day somebody that you probably remember from your days in Washington, Secretary Bennett. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember him? Well, he was on, he hasn't been around too much lately. I mean, but he was on TV the other day and he was saying something that really stuck with me. He said, if we don't, you know, if parents, and I'm paraphrasing him, but if parents keep taking their kids out of public schools like they are, he says, we may be losing our public schools. Because a lot of these, I mean, right now, George, I saw a stat that 11%, and this is pre-pandemic, 11% of the kids in the United States were going to homeschooling. That's 1 out of 10
yeah.
in homeschooling. Now, my guess is that a little bit higher than that now. So, I mean, a lot of those parents who are having their kids at home and spending their own money on their kids' education at home or going to a private school, a Catholic school or whatever. Catholic schools seem to be the more reasonable tuition. But if you're going into your own pocket to pay for all of this and then you have to turn around and pay taxes for a public school system you're not using, I think I can see a little
resentment. See a problem coming downstream.
Yeah, big problem there. A lot of those parents are going to say, hey, wait a minute. Why am I paying for these schools and as well as so?
Why am I paying twice?
Why am I paying twice? That's exactly right. And so I can see the public schools. Now, the public schools could fix that by becoming better.
Ah, that's a thought.
I mean, by you know, saying, hey,
that's a real thought.
We're going to be really good because we're going to work real hard to keep your kid with us. But the teachers union doesn't have that mentality.
No.
That's their downfall.
No, you're supposed to support them because you're supposed to, and that's it.
Right. That's it. Well, as someone said to me one time, we were talking about Pemex, you know, the oil monopoly in Mexico.
Right.
And so he said to me, monopolies have a way of viewing things. They think it's all about them and not about the customer.
Yep.
And I think that's what the teachers' unions have forgotten, that the parents are the customers.
That's right. And they should look at them as the customer.
Exactly. Exactly right. That's exactly right. All right, George, one more topic here tonight. Documents. Now, I know when you worked in Washington.
Let me hide
Washington. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't have any. By the way, there's a really funny cartoon today in the Dallas Morning News of some people going to the Lincoln Memorial to see if there's any documents and you know, see if Lincoln had any documents. But you were in Washington. I always thought that this document thing was taken very seriously by every administration. But what really puzzles me, George, I'll explain it this way, and I want to get your reaction. You have this agency, whatever their name is, the Archives, and you have this agency, and when it came to President Trump, they were really quick to go after him.
Correct.
They were on top of it. They knew exactly what he had, what they were missing. I mean, they were quick. Okay, I'm not defending President Trump, but they were very quick in going after President Trump. Then on the other hand, you have documents from the Obama administration sitting at Joe Biden's home for five, 6 years at an office, at a college or whatever. And there doesn't seem to be the same urgency to get those documents. So what that says to me is that maybe there's a little too much politics at the agency, George.
You know, there are so many small agencies, Archives being among them, that are really not paid attention to. And they are there because they're supposed to do something. I remember, you know, and I've served in three administrations, and I remember that every time in each of those administrations, you were told you've got to take care of these documents, and then they define what is a sensitive document, and you are supposed to keep a little card with you all the time, because if it mentions this, if it mentions that, it's supposed to be a sensitive document. On the other hand, it is a classified document if it mentions these certain things. When I worked in the Attorney General's office in Washington for Ed Meese, definitely I came across some sensitive documents, but I also came across some classified documents. Now, when you leave work, on a daily basis. You go through security. In some cases, you know, they check sporadically. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they do. So you had to be on your guard. I, for one, do not understand this situation. I really don't, especially if you worked in the White House. The day that I worked in the White House for 8 months, and then I went over to just the Department of Justice. The day I left, I had to account for everything, including staplers. I mean, so I for the life of me, now this was in the Reagan administration. Maybe they were doing that with the Reagan folks. But, I mean, I just don't, for the life of me, understand how you could walk out of sensitive documents or classified documents.
Right.
On the other hand, there's also the situation up on the Capitol Hill where they're supposed to have a room where they have a room where again, classified documents are looked at. And again, classified documents from that room were taken out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it. I'm sorry.
Well, and Joe Biden, when senator, as a senator,
exactly,
had some documents, which means that
he's been doing this for a while.
Yeah, that's right. Or he took them out. How did he, I mean, like you were saying, you know, you're inside a room. And I, by the way, I've had other people say the same thing to me. Barry Jacobson, who had a friend of ours. He's been on the show several times. And he worked with, you know, in the elites, military, the special forces.
Oh my God.
And special force. So at times they had to look at some documents. And he told me the story that you go into a room and they put it on the table or whatever, and you're supposed to be, they check you before you go in, they check you before you go out.
Exactly.
And in the case of Joe Biden, but again, the question I have, if I was asking somebody from the archives, is, okay, weren't you missing the documents that President, I mean, because those documents that Joe Biden had at the Penn, at the university or at his home, whatever his motive was, those documents actually were part of the Obama administration.
Exactly.
So why didn't the Obama administration get a letter from the archives said, Mr. President, sorry to bother you, but there's like a box of documents from your administration that we cannot find. You told us that everything was okay, which apparently he did, but there are some missing. Where are they? Who possibly has them? That urgency that I saw with Trump, I didn't see with those documents, George.
Exactly.
That's
exactly
my reaction.
And this is what is both irritating and puzzling is, okay, so if you got that standard for this person but not that person, then to what level are we playing politics here?
Right. And that's what I hope the Congress gets into, because, you know, we've heard the stories about the FBI, and again, 99% of the people at the FBI, you know well, are wonderful people. They're patriots. In many cases, they risk their lives for us. But my gosh, there was a little too much politics going on there. And now you have this. So you have to ask yourself the question, over at the archives, did somebody say, well, those are the Obama documents. You don't have
right.
to push him. Well, these are the Trump documents. We got to go after them. That kind of politicization, that's poisonous for the country.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. And I think that this is why some of the Democrats have even stepped up and are worried about it. Because, I mean, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And if he has been removing classified documents since he was a senator, he's got a problem.
Yeah, he does. And I have no idea how he got those documents. Now, some people are saying, well, though he was a senator 14 years ago, whatever it was, those documents don't have much value. Well, I don't know about that, because correct me if I'm wrong, George, the reason we go out of our way to protect those documents is because of names that are on those documents
correct.
Of people working with us in other countries that we don't want to expose, because they could get killed. If nothing else, they could get killed.
You know, it's not just the names. It's other things. But the fact of the matter that he takes them out, and there could be sensitive information as well as sensitive names in there. You know, come on. Let's gosh, on Fox News, Tucker Carlson made an outrageous allegation. Hannity has also made one too, saying that perhaps he is a foreign agent, that Biden is behaving like a foreign agent. Well, you know, you've got to ask yourself, what the heck is he doing? Is he that dumb or what?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've heard that too, and I'm inclined to think that he probably wouldn't survive the foreign agent test if they gave him one, because you know what I mean. I don't think he's up to, you know, when he was younger maybe, but right now. But I do think, and I will make this prediction, because this is not original of mine, but of me, I mean, but I do think maybe there's something going on with his son. And that's the reason they got to the document. So I'm going to make a prediction that they were investigating his son, and the son said, yeah, by the way, there are some documents at my dad's house.
They're all over the place.
Yeah, and that's why they went there. That's my gut feeling. I have no proof, gut feeling. That's my gut feeling in all of this. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. But no matter how it goes, it's not
good. It needs to go. Whatever goes, it's got to go.
And I really think this archives agency has got to be, they've got to be asked the tough questions, because they're acting differently.
They better not be sleeping.
Well, but if you're going to sleep for both. Yeah. Don't sleep for one side. And you know what I mean? You got to be fair with both sides. Well, George, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Now, what's behind you there is your picture. That's your, high school graduation picture back there?
Yeah, right.
But you do the show every Saturday.
Every Saturday, 2 o'clock.
On The Answer down in San Antonio. I think we have a station here too called The Answer. I think it's all
part of a network.
Yes.
The Answer is part of a network.
You do that show at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoons. Right. And you've invited me a couple of times, and I appreciate that. So I want to thank you, as always, so much for the great work that you do. For everything that you do, and I look forward to seeing you again. We promised the audience that we were going to get together more often this year, and we're keeping our promise.
I'm ready whenever you need.
All right.
Take
thank you so much. Have a wonderful day, George. Our good friend George Rodriguez from South Texas, as you saw in that banner behind him, he does do a show with The Answer, which is a talk station in San Antonio. I'm assuming you could pick it up on the podcast or on the internet, the station's internet. You can probably pick it up. I've been a guest on the show a couple of times, and we've had some good chats. But again, you know, this thing with the documents is a question that I believe, you know, leaves a lot of people dumbfounded as to how this happened. And I have some real questions for the agency that runs these archives. That's what I have. Because they're clearly showing me that they were asleep when it came to Biden and the Obama documents, but they were very urgent when it came to the Trump documents. Not defending what Trump did, maybe everything he did was wrong, but if you're going to go after somebody, one president over documents, you got to do the same for the others. Doesn't seem to me here, from what I've seen, that they did that. Also, I am pretty sure when I say this, if the Attorney General had known in August that President Biden had a document problem of his own, I'm pretty sure he would not have sent the FBI. I'm pretty sure about that, that he would not have sent the FBI to President Trump's home. So the Attorney General himself has got to be under a lot of pressure here to make sure that he plays it well and that he plays it evenly, because this is a big mess that they've put themselves in. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.